This is Sustainable Long Island with co-producer Tony Ernst. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. This week, a conversation with New York Assemblyman Fred Thiel about climate and environment-related legislation before the state legislature this session. Without further ado, here's that conversation. Well, Fred Thiel, welcome to now Sustainable Long Island.
Thank you, Francesca. It's good to be here on a Friday afternoon in January.
That's great. And that's what we're here for. And let's start out. We have a lot to cover. So let's first start with legislation that passed in the last session that you're proud about being part of. And let's just start with the one I is right front of mind. That's the LIPA Public Power Bill. Tell us briefly about that.
There's a lot of issues with LIPA, and the ones that are of great concern on the East End, all of the towns have been involved with this, was the issue of CCA, Community Choice Aggregation, and it commonly gets called CCA. And really what we're talking about is the ability of being able to go out into the marketplace and buy your electricity from somebody other than LIPA. We're stuck with LIPA when it comes to transmission and distribution, but we have the ability under the law to go out and buy our power from other places other than LIPA. So, typically there's two things that people look at. They would like to get cheaper power, but just as important is they would like to have renewable energy. So much of what LIPA has, and the grid here on Long Island is all fossil fuel. So the ability to purchase renewable energy for us here on the Long Island to meet our climate goals is of critical importance. So the big picture here with this was that on the state level, the Public Service Commission had put together a CCA program. But unfortunately for us on Long Island, LIPA isn't subject to Public Service Commission regulations. And what our local towns, Southampton, East Hampton, Brookhaven, towns that were interested in initiating a CCA program were finding was that LIPA was putting roadblocks in their way. And, really the purpose of my legislation was that we shouldn't be discriminated because we're on Long Island and we're not subject to Public Service Commission regulation and their program. So my legislation was pretty simple, and that is whatever the program is for the state of New York when it comes to CCA and being able to purchase our own power, LIPA can't put any additional roadblocks in our way. They have to provide a program so that Long Island has the same opportunities for CCA that are out there across the rest of the state. And we got that bill passed in the legislature, and the governor signed the bill. And so now my local towns that are interested in this are going to be able to work with LIPA and avoid these roadblocks and poison pills that sometimes LIPA has wanted to put in the way as far as being able to set up CCA programs.
Well, that's great. And then just like super briefly, because I really want to go on to the legislation that's coming up in the current session. But does that also mean then that in a few years that LIPA can become a true public power utility?
Yeah, that has been the issue, the underlying issue for a long time. I mean, we'll talk about various aspects of LIPA, whether it be renewable energy, storm response, the transparency, governance, things of that nature. And we've had a lot of issues with LIPA. We certainly saw that during Tropical Storm Isaias, when the utility was even unable to really communicate with us. So, when LIPA was originally formed back in the 1980s, the Long Island Power Authority, it had two goals. One was to close and make sure the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant never operated. And the second was to have a true public authority, true public utility. And the first happened, the second never happened. Instead, LIPA became really a shell corporation that really just contracted with a private utility to operate LIPA. You know, and right now it's PSE&G Long Island. It used to be National Grid. At one point it was T-SPAN, and it's never worked. We are the only utility in the country that has this third-party management model where we contract with a private utility to run our electric company. So many of us would like to see LIPA become a true public utility, that where LIPA operates the electric system directly, where the governance of LIPA is responsible to the people of Long Island. Right now, the LIPA board is picked by the governor, the Speaker of the Assembly, and the Senate Majority Leader. They are not responsive to the people of Long Island. So Senator Gorin and I have put in a bill that would set into motion a process that would ultimately yield, hopefully in the next year or two, a full public power company, where we get to select the Board of Trustees for LIPA, where they directly operate the utility company. We think that's the way that it will be most accountable, most transparent. There'll be the most focus on making the transition to renewable energy and reaching our climate goals. So that bill has been introduced, and we need to pass it this year so that the future of LIPA isn't beholden to Albany, but the people of Long Island can control it themselves, and we can have the kind of utility company that that Long Islanders want and deserve.
Do you know what the number of that bill is?
Our timetable is to pass the Future of LIPA Commission bill this year, design our public utility, and get it adopted by 2023. Right now, as you know, PSE&G is still the manager of our utility company. They had just entered into another agreement, to continue that relationship. We don't want any more contracts with PSE&G Long Island. So we want to get this done in the next year or two. And we're hoping to get the legislation adopted by April 1st and get this process on its way.
Oh, that's terrific. So, well, that's a great segue into some other bills that you are sponsoring or co-sponsoring. First, let's talk about the Fossil Free Utilities Act, since we've just been talking about utilities. Tell us about that. Where it's in committee right now. What are, what's the bill and what are the prospects for it?
Yeah, we're just at the beginning of the 2022 legislative session. So most bills at this point in time are in committee. And, just to kind of give a very, very short tutorial on how the session operates, we go back to Albany in January. The governor gives the State of the State address, outlines her priorities. The first order of business is the state budget. The governor very shortly will be presenting her budget, and we have to adopt that by April 1st. And then, we focus from once the budget is done, we really focus on our other legislative initiatives. And one of them is the Fossil Free Utilities Act, which prohibit the development of any new major electric generating facilities that would be powered in whole or in part by fossil fuels. And, right now, certainly across New York State, far too much of our power is either generated by oil or natural gas. We're certainly beginning the transition. We passed our Climate Act a couple of years ago that sets standards for when we should make the transition and how to make that transition. But, right now, too much of our power comes from fossil fuels. And this would just outlaw and prohibit any more major generating facilities from using fossil fuels. Our focus should be on solar. It should be on wind. It should be on geothermal, on power sources that are not going to contribute to greenhouse gases, are not going to make climate change worse. And that's what this bill would do. It would basically put it in law that the state of New York, whether it be through the Public Services Commission and through these various siting boards, that no new major generating facilities of electricity are going to use fossil fuels.
And you mentioned the budget. Maybe before we go into the rest of the legislation, there is the NYSERDA, which is a state agency that develops renewable energy, said that in order to implement the CLCPA, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, that New York needs to spend between $10 and $15 billion a year. So there is an ask. I know that you were sponsoring the CCIA that would have funded the Climate Act, but that came under the withering assault of the fossil fuel industry in New York State. And I believe the strategy is now to just at this year is to ask for $15 billion to kickstart the Climate Act. So I wonder if you could talk about that amount of money and what do you think are the prospects for the governor signing that into the budget?
Sure. And as you mentioned, we do have goals that we need to meet with regard to climate change and to make the transition, as we've said already, from fossil fuels to renewable energy, whether you're talking about electric power generation or automobiles or various aspects of our society, it's going to cost money. But I see it as an investment. It's not just an investment in our climate and an investment in our environment, but it's an investment in a new economy that's going to generate green jobs, but we have to make the investment and that's going to cost money. The issue has always been, well, where's the money going to come from and how are we going to pay for it? And you mentioned the CCIA, which would put the burden on the polluters, on those that are generating and utilizing fossil fuels. And as you said, that has been very controversial. It's been mischaracterized, in my opinion. And, but ultimately, we're going to still have to go and look at a renewable and continuing revenue source. But for now, let's just talk about 2022. You're really talking about that down payment, at least for this. Let's just talk about 1 year, and that's this year, budget year for 2022. And, the estimate is, as you say, that we should be putting at least $15 billion into implementing the New York Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. So we're gonna learn a lot in the next, as I say, in the next week or so, because the governor is going to make her budget proposal. So one thing I would say about this year is that, the New York State budget is in a very, very good position because of the bills that were passed in Washington by the Biden administration and by the Congress that provided money for infrastructure, provided COVID money for all of our local governments for the state. We have a substantial surplus in 2022. And what better way to utilize a portion of that surplus but to invest it in our response to climate change?
This is Sustainable Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. I'm talking with New York Assemblyman Fred Thiel about climate and environmental legislation before the state legislature. So maybe since we're talking about climate and fossil fuels and clean energy, maybe we'll continue on this. And then later on, we can get to some of the other environmental bills that you have been sponsoring or co-sponsoring. One climate bill that I think a lot of people don't know about is Assembly Bill A7389B, and I don't know what it's called, but it's about Bitcoin. It's about putting a moratorium on operations that use proof-of-work authentication methods to validate blockchain transactions. Now, that's kind of a mouthful. Tell us about that bill and why it's so important.
Certainly. The sponsor of that bill is a freshman assembly member from Ithaca. Anna Kellis is the sponsor of that bill because her district and some of the lakes in her district have been directly impacted in a very adverse way by a lot of this, Bitcoin technology that's going on. It's very, very energy intensive. And the impact of some of those operations in her area has been to, you know, literally change the temperature of some of the lakes because of all the energy, the volume of energy that is used. So, you know, it's not just that how much energy they're using, it's the fact that it has a significant impact on the environment, and particularly the surface waters environments. So, you know, the impact on energy, the impact on climate that can come from these operations is substantial. We need to put the brakes on. And that's why she's proposing a moratorium. So the bill's been introduced. It has an impact, certainly in her district, but it could be any of our districts where this could happen. And we need to do a more comprehensive overview and study about what the impact of this particular industry is going to be on our environment and on energy usage. So that's the bill's for a moratorium on these practices. And I'm a co-sponsor. She and I and Assemblyman Englebright, who chairs the Environmental Conservation Committee, have worked very hard together to get this bill adopted. And I'm very optimistic, hopefully, that we'll be able to make some progress with this in 2022.
Oh, that's great. I mean, we should point out that these companies are buying on the cheap old fossil fuel plants and using them, and that there's a whole other kind of way to do blockchain that is not energy intensive, that's not proof of work. But let's go on to here's another one, a clean fuel standard. That was the clean fuel standard of 2021. I think it's been reintroduced, or will it be reintroduced?
I think it's introduced, but it needs some amendments because it's not 2021 anymore. So there's going to be some technical changes to the bill, but it has been introduced. As I recall, that is Assembly Member Kerry Werner, who is the sponsor of that bill, and she's from the Capital District, just north of Albany. And you know, that legislation, and again, you know, a clean fuel standard, it's kind of self-explanatory, right? So it's a bill that I also expect to be given serious consideration in 2022. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, we did the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act back a couple of years ago. Great bill, you know, a groundbreaking piece of legislation that set standards, created the roadmap really for how we are going to combat climate change. But, you know, goals are only goals. You have to have ways of implementing them. And, you know, what we're talking about today, whether you're talking about $15 billion in the budget or each of these bills, you know, if you look at them in isolation, maybe they seem like, well, that's a small bill. But when you add them all together, you know, these are the decisions one at a time. Each small decision is how we're going to get to our climate goals.
Absolutely. And here's another one, which is about agriculture. I think a lot of people, you know, they don't think about agriculture as being a key segment of transitioning to a clean energy economy. And here's one that establishes a tax credit for farmers who maximize carbon sequestration through carbon farming, land management. Tell us about this bill and what its prospects are for passage, because I think it's critically important.
Yeah, and you know, even here on the east end of Long Island, you know, people upstate don't believe this. They have a vision of what Long Island looks like, but agriculture is critical here on the east end of Long Island. Suffolk County, largely because of the east end, is one of the most productive agricultural counties in the state. So agriculture is important to the local economy, but obviously has an impact out there. And, you know, we want to keep our farmers in business, you know, producing food for us. But at the same time, you know, we want them, their industry has to help meet these carbon goals also. So, you know, I think the best way to do that is through a bill like this, where you're providing incentives to agriculture through, in this case, a tax credit for farmers who do the right thing, so that it becomes more economically feasible for them to be able to implement these strategies to reduce the amount of carbon that gets generated. So, you know, to me, it's better to use incentives. It's better, you know, to use a carrot than to use a stick. And that's why I think this bill is a good approach because it recognizes that agriculture is one of our critical industries, but it's also a major contributor to carbon. And the way to try to reduce that impact is by providing economic incentives through tax credits that help the agricultural industry be good and responsible neighbors for us as we all are attempting to deal with climate change.
And here's another agricultural one, not related to climate change, but, well, maybe so, actually, because in CAFOs, industrial farming of animals is a major contributor to climate change. That pertains to the confinement of animals for food-producing purposes. Tell us about this. I know a lot of people who really care about the devastation that we wreak on the lives of our domestic farm animals will care about.
You know, you're right. There's probably a climate component to this also, but it also relates to how we treat animals. And people are probably aware of my efforts on a whole host of issues with regard to, you know, whether it's open space preservation or water quality or public transportation, a lot of the things that I work on. People may be less aware of, you know, of my strong support for the way that we treat animals. And to me, again, another important bill. You know, it's a little early in the session. You know, we've got a whole laundry list of bills that we're talking about. I'm not sure yet. I haven't had a chance to inquire about, you know, what the outlook is for this bill yet, but it is a bill that I support and we'll be working on here during 2022.
Talking about animals a little bit more, there is also the Birds and Bees Protection Act. And we know that birds and bees are really critical for pollination. You know, I hate to talk this way, but, you know, self-interest of human beings is ecosystem services. Plus, what would we do without birds and bees? Tell us about the Birds and Bees Protection Act.
You know, the title is Birds and Bees, and because that's what we, and it's about protection. But what we're talking about here is the impact of, you know, certain chemicals and pesticides that adversely affect our birds and bees. And, you know, let's face it, you know, historically, you know, we haven't, you know, there's been an over-reliance upon chemicals, upon pesticides, upon, you know, chemical fertilizers and things of that nature that can certainly impact the ecosystem. And, you know, listen, we've all heard out there about, you know, how there's been a collapse in the bee population. And some of it is because we've disrupted the ecology with chemicals. That's what this bill is attempting to address. And that is, you know, one of the things we're talking about here certainly is, you know, our birds, our bees, you know, insects, you know, all part of the circle of life. But, you know, the other thing with these chemicals also is the impact, especially on Long Island, we have to be aware of this, is the impact that they have on water quality. We get our drinking water from underground aquifers, and what we apply to the land above ground oftentimes ends up in our groundwater. And we've seen this way, way too many times here on Eastern Long Island, where various pesticides and insecticides that were used for agricultural purposes end up in our drinking water. So they're not just disrupting our birds and our bees, but they're also a threat to our environment and to our drinking water and to humans. So, you know, the Birds and Bees Act had a lot of support in 2021. It didn't get over the finish line. But, you know, I certainly know from talking to our committee chair, Steve Englebright, who's a big supporter of this bill, that, you know, this is going to be a priority for 2022.
And now I'm going to ask you about a bill that you haven't yet co-sponsored. You know, you have, it looks like, hundreds of bills that you are sponsoring. But it's the All-Electric Building Act that would provide that no city, town, or village would issue a permit for the construction of new buildings that are not all-electric if the initial application was submitted after basically the end of 2023. So starting 2024, new building permits would need to be for all electric buildings. Are you planning on co-sponsoring this?
Well, I certainly support the intent and what the what this bill is trying to do. The only reason I haven't co-sponsored it yet is because it affects, you know, cities, towns, villages. I chair the local government committee. The bill has only been introduced, you know, probably for a few weeks, maybe a few months. It's a relatively new bill. And, you know, I want to make sure that it can be, you know, we get the best bill possible. Part of my responsibility in the assembly, because they chair local governments, is to get the input of local governments, like in the cities, towns, and villages that are going to have to implement this bill. So at this stage, we're at the beginning of session, and we're starting our conversations with local governments, with my committee. So I'm just looking to get their input and get everybody's take on this, because, again, it does affect the committee that I chair. But the bill is good. The intent is good. And, you know, basically, we're just looking at the details here. You know, how can it best work, and what input do they have with regard to this legislation?
So let me give you the opportunity to mention a bill, either or both, that was accomplished last year, or one that I have not mentioned that you think is critically important, an environmentally related bill that you would like our listeners to know about.
I would say that for me, the bill that I'm working on is something that it's not out there yet. It still deals with water quality. And we need a recurring local source of revenue in Suffolk County to fully implement the county's water quality improvement plan, basically. And in essence, you know, we've got about 360,000 septic systems. They need to be upgraded. Cesspools, septic systems, old septic systems are polluting our groundwater. And we're starting to upgrade them with innovative and alternative septic systems that actually remove nitrogen from our septic waste. And we're just scratching the surface. We need to do hundreds of thousands of these. We're doing hundreds. And, you know, the County of Suffolk is requesting legislation that would permit for a funding source to be able to really scale up their water quality program. And that's a bill that hasn't been introduced yet that I'm working on with the county. I still believe that reversing the trend of declining water quality on Long Island needs to be one of our critical resources. And that's the bill that I'm working on right now that isn't quite ready for prime time yet, hasn't been introduced, but I expect that it will be later during the 2022 session.
Oh, that's great. And we'll have to have you back on the show to talk about that when it is introduced. Fred Thiel, it has been, you know, we've just really touched the surface. It's just been great talking with you.
Oh, hopefully we'll be able to do it again, and there'll be few, you know, we'll know more about the budget as the session goes along. So I'll be glad to come back and talk about other initiatives and also give an update on some of the things we talked about today.
Oh, that would be great.
Thank you, Francesca.
This is Sustainable Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. We heard a conversation with New York Assemblyman Fred Thiel of Assembly District 1. Sustainable Long Island is heard on the third Wednesday each month at this time, and also on the second Saturday each month at 9 a.m. Programs are archived at sustainablelongisland.blogspot.com. The program is produced by Tony Ernst, and yours truly, Francesca Rhiannon.